Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 172, and this week I am very pleased to be joined by a returning guest, as heard on several Wrestling with Words spinoff podcasts, and a close personal friend of Andrew T. Rich. Hello, Skylar.
Hello, friends and listeners. Thank you for doing my intro. I really should have included more. If I knew that you were going to be game, I would have, included a few more.
Well, I thought it'd be funny if I didn't tell you I was going to do it, and I just did it. So.
Yeah, well, official wanter of Trump death. Yeah, I think we could all agree. I think that could be an omakase, like all, the Omakase Corporation. So all guests, past and present and future, we can all agree. We're going to officially endorse that now.
Yes, I can think of one who might have a problem, maybe.
Is Jeff Hawkins on that?
Yes. that's exactly what I was thinking of. but yes, like... As far as, I don't know, you just brought up the Trump thing. That was like the craziest night on Twitter.
It was really gold. It was, this was like the non-wrestling version of like the Fujita match, like the Fujita Go match, where it just felt for an hour like Twitter was standing still, like I was in the Matrix.
It was pretty amazing. I mean, I don't know. Just like the absurdity of it, of like he would downplay this thing. Like on stage of that debate and like literally make fun of his opponent for wearing a mask all the time and then get it like 2 days later. It was one of those, I am agnostic. Maybe there is a God. I don't know. It just felt way too like, huh?
Yeah. This is like one of the WWE storylines where like, there's like a mud pit and one guy's teased getting thrown in the mud pit, but then, he accidentally gets thrown in the mud pit. It's literally just this. It's like an Attitude Era storyline.
It's something. I mean, and then all the, and like the Weekend at Bernie's vibe with these doctors being like, we're giving him an experimental phase 3 drug that may or may not work with a compassionate use exception, but he's doing great, and here he is like, signing some blank pages. It's like, come, how fucking stupid do you think people are, man? I get that we elected him, so we're pretty fucking stupid, but like, even his own supporters don't seem to be buying this shit, so I don't know.
They're like, we're giving Trump the limitless pill and hoping that his expanding brain power will help him like out of this disease.
It's like, okay. But yeah, so if he's gonna die or not, this is not where I expected the start of this podcast to go. But I don't disapprove.
Yeah, I feel like it's important to just get it out there that we officially endorse the death of the President of the United States.
I hope the CIA does not listen.
Yeah, these views are indeed shared by the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
I want to say for the CIA
parody.
Here's
in
this
Fortnite and Grand Theft Auto.
This is satire.
Parody.
Satire. Yes. So I wonder if this will be, will this finally get me like people complaining on Twitter. I never get the complaints on Twitter that like the Super J-Cast gets when Joel just like opens his mouth. I guess like Joel will say the most mild anti-Trump thing of all time, and there will be some dude with like a Blue Lives Matter avatar or Thin Blue Line avatar who's like, I am never again listening to the Super J-Cast. You have not gotten my $0 for the last time, sir.
I think in terms of reactionary fan base, I mean, I would be surprised if any of the, you know, Japanese wrestling podcasts, outside of the Joshi one, probably. I mean, that one has a history of some weirdos, but besides that, I think we're all cool guys here.
Yeah.
Cool friends.
I'm sure. I hope someone's going to add us about this one, I think, but we'll say. And for that person who's listening right now, I'm very angry. I don't care. You don't have to at me. It's fine.
Yeah.
As far as what else has been going on, Skyler, other than thinking about the possible death of the U.S. president?
Well, yeah, things are lovely here in Washington, D.C. I've recently become an exercise person, which, you know, trying to be like a body guy, trying to be like all of these wrestlers. I'm going to be in shape for the first time in my entire life. And, you know, watching professional wrestling and seeing like all these like 55-year-old guys with like abs, I'm just like, I could do this. I mean, I'm you know, still an adult. I can definitely have like the Tanahashi body. So yeah, that's what I'm aiming for right now.
Tanahashi body. I mean, how the hell Minoru Suzuki still looks like even as good as he looks at 52?
Oh, yeah, he's very handsome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, remember how Ric Flair used to look in his 50s on WCW?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's like he, with all that loose skin where they finally told him to start wearing t-shirts. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, Ric Flair sort of always has looked old, though.
That's true. That is true. But yeah, I don't know. Suzuki's pulled it off. Nagata is another one. It's like, I don't know what. Although Nagata always has those gross cups on his, like, from cupping all over his body.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, him and Ospreay, I feel like. I wonder if they do it together.
Have you ever looked that up, by the way? It's total bullshit.
Oh, of course. Mean,
it's like
every time I see it, I'm just like, come on, guys.
I've looked it up and like, is cupping, like Google, like, is cupping real? The answer is like, no. It's not even like a maybe. It's like unequivocally, it's like, this does nothing.
Yeah, so. I don't like that cupping sounds like, if to an uninformed person, like some sort of sex.
It definitely does. Yes. It definitely does.
Sounds like something the kids are doing nowadays.
the kids are cupping. Yeah. But other than that, I guess you've been doing good.
Yeah, everything's been great. Although I had not been watching much wrestling during quarantine. So then when you told me, it's like, oh, well, we're going to watch like the last show of the G1 and the newest of the G1 and the N1. I was like, well, I have to watch these now. So I've watched like four wrestling shows a day this week.
I think my exact question to you was, have you been keeping up with the G1 and the N1? And you were just like, yes. And then,
well, I mean, I've been following the Twitter and laughing at the things, the results I don't like, is what I meant.
Okay, so. But you did catch up. That's good.
Yes, we're all caught up.
That's good. But yeah, the G1, I say the G1, the M1. I mean, they've both been good. The one that's been bad, we're not talking about today. So
yeah, really, we have to mention it because I wanted, you know, Shuji Ishikawa, one of my favorite wrestlers of the last decade. You know, I'm not going to disrespect his booking right now. I will say that booking is not the only problem, but it is part of the problem over there.
Yeah, I mean, we really ripped into it on last week's show. And that's a good transition for the Patreon plug, because if you want to hear me talk about the Champion Carnival final tomorrow or today or in the past, depending on when you're listening to this, but the Champion Carnival final is Monday, October 5th. I'll be covering that on the Omakase Patreon, bringing in Paul Vosch of Voice of Wrestling, who does all the All Japan coverage, does a really good job on, along with Gerard and Thomas and, you know, some other people. But yeah, Paul is coming on. Gerard was on for the first night, and Paul is going to be on for the finals. So that's basically the main two Voice of Wrestling All Japan people. So yeah, so Paul will be on me tomorrow to do that, and also the G1... night 9, I believe. If we go up to night 9. So yeah, so that'll be on the Patreon. We'll have the G1 shows from Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday as well, because this is a really packed G1 week. So, you know, all that stuff, plus all the past content on the Patreon with all the G1 shows, Champion Carnival shows and M1 shows we didn't cover on the free feed. You can find all of that at patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. $5 per month. Great time to sign up here at the start of the month. You get, you know, an entire month worth of stuff here for only $5. And you'll hear all of our coverage all the way to the end of the G1. So it'll be a lot of fun. So yeah, patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. Feels like a low energy plug here, but I don't.
Wow, what value?
Yeah, it's a great. It is. I don't know. I've reached a number where I'm happy with it. Like,
is that number higher than the Everything Elite Patreon? That was your goal?
No. I think it is still below Everything Elite. But like I had a financial number in mind mostly, and I'm basically there. So like. I don't know.
Yeah,
like
for the listeners, John did tell me he's making $60,000 a month.
Yes, that's how much I'm making for sure. But no, I mean, like there were weeks in the past where I probably sounded like I was begging people to sign up, and now it's like, well, you can sign up if you want. I'll take more money, but I've reached a point now where like if everybody sticks around, I'm pretty happy. So
yeah, you're part of the 1% now. Thank you. But you're part of the elite.
Exactly. No, God, not that. Anything but anything but that. That's another. That actually brings up another thing I want to mention. So. This made me think of Harold May getting fired, as it sounds like. I mean, it could be resigned. It probably was fired, you know, read into what you will. But they apparently mentioned on the Super J-Cast, I haven't listened to the newest episode yet, but they mentioned my run-in with Harold May at Dominion 2019. Do you remember the story, Sky? Did I ever tell you this one?
Yeah, weren't you throwing shit at him?
Yeah, so I promised Manabu, one of the Super J-Cast super fans who also listen to Omakase a lot, that I would tell the story on Omakase this week. So basically, I'm at Dominion 2019. There, you know, at Osaka Joe Hall. There is no intermission because, you know, New Japan had gotten rid of their intermissions prior to COVID when they brought them back to, you know, do that fucking clean theater bullshit they do. Because it's like, it doesn't even spread by surfaces. Why are people still doing this shit? Anyway. The cleaning theater intermission. But in 2019, there was no intermission. But yeah, so I had to pee really bad. But I also wanted to get back to my seat very quickly because, you know, want to watch the show. So I am very quickly walking towards this exit, holding a Coke bottle. I see out of the corner of my eye a garbage can. I think I could kind of make out that there's a person there, but I seriously did not see who they were or even that there was a person there for sure. And I just fucking fling the Coke bottle at this garbage can. And, you know, my friend Quinlan, friend of the show, has been on before, is standing right behind me. And, you know, he's walking with me to the bathroom, I guess. And he sees me throw this Coke bottle. And I want to stress, I got it in the garbage can. I did not actually hit the man standing there. But Quinlan's like, do you know who you just almost threw a Coke bottle at? And I'm just like, who? I don't know. And he's like, that was fucking Harold May. And I'm like, oh, okay. Wow. It's like he jumped backwards. Like so he just sees, so from Harold's perspective, he sees this fucking big fat American walking towards this garbage can, just fucking fling this Coke bottle like I'm about to toss it right in his fucking face, and like apparently did like an actual jump. I'm relying on Quinlan's account because I never saw him until like I was, you know, halfway up the staircase or whatever, and finally turned back and confirmed it was him. But yeah,
well, to be fair, when you said you saw a big fat American, you probably thought you were Chris Jericho, right? I know he's Canadian, but I mean, he's definitely had a very similar build that time of his career.
There you go. But yeah, I don't know. It was very funny. Just a very funny little story that I almost threw. Because all these people were posting this shit on Twitter when Harold, you know, stepped down or whatever. Like, you know, oh, I met him outside this show. It was so nice. Oh, I met him at this meet and greet. Because he always did these meet and greets outside the shows where he'd like meet up with the fans or whatever. And I was like, yep, my Harold interaction was I almost threw a Coke bottle at him. That's my interaction with him. So,
yeah, if only you would have gotten like banned for life from Osaka Joe Hall for something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I want to stress because I've heard people tell the story as John hit Harold May with a Coke bottle. I did not hit him with the Coke bottle. Made it in the garbage can.
Then you yelled at him. It's like, yeah, I would have monkey flipped you too if you're super drunk.
It's like, I had great aim, okay? I was just very, I was in a big rush, and I was like, I guess really, really aggressively whipped the thing in there, so he got very scared, but, you know, it was, that's my run-in.
and now he's gone.
And now he's gone. There you go.
Yeah.
So now, obviously, because of me, that's true. Obviously, this means the AEW New Japan relationship is going to happen tomorrow. So everybody get very excited for that. Some of these fucking tweets from people.
Finally. It's like Darby Allin in the Best of Super Juniors. The only good thing that could come of it.
Well, people, if you look at these tweets, I mean, they're so fucking ridiculous of, like, the scenarios. First of all, they're almost always people who like AEW more than New Japan. It goes without saying. Second of all, they're, like, the fucking scenarios they lay out are always stuff that, like, really doesn't benefit New Japan at all and really is all about AEW and their storylines.
Yeah.
Like, the one I saw that really was like, oh my god, was like, some guy was like, we can finally get it. Heel Golden Lovers versus Adam... Heel Golden Lovers versus Adam Page and Tanahashi on Dynamite. I'm like, why would New Japan... So, okay, so take Kota and Tanahashi, a established tag team in New Japan Pro Wrestling, who are both babyfaces, and split them up for the basis of New Japan storylines, and quickly turn Kota Ibushi heel so he can have a reunion with Kenny Omega. And by the way, it's on Dynamite. Like, okay, sure.
That's the thing. I don't understand how, you know, people square away like New Japan's USA stuff, because I mean they're already running into issues with like Ring of Honor with this, so of course they're running into issues with like AEW, which has like bigger touring plans.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if it happened eventually on like, you know, like some kind of limited basis, but like the people who think they're going to be like best buddies forever now and, you know, immediately announce like they're merging into one company and all this shit, just like, I think you're just you know, it's like wish shit, you know? Like, I could stand here and be like, it'd be like me coming on the air and being like, Tetsuya Naito will be double champion for the next 7 years. He'll be Bruno Sammartino style. And like, it's just what I want to happen. It's not actually anything that's realistic. So, I don't know. Like, some of this fucking, like, the elite people are, like, AEW people have, like, the most, like, I don't know, like, wish casting as prediction slash, like I've ever seen. I don't know. And I shouldn't say all, because, like, there are plenty of AEW fans that don't give a shit. Like, the people on Everything Elite and stuff, like, they don't give a fuck if there's a New Japan relationship. But there's, like, a specific kind of AEW fan that's, like, very, you know, gung-ho about it and has basically been asking about it. Like, you know, I know Rich Craig, when he ever does those Q&As, like, he still gets these questions every week, like, about, well, what would New Japan and AEW be like? And it's like, I think he just skips them now because it's like such a boring fucking topic.
So. Yeah, I actually think AEW is probably better off, or like their style is now becoming more distinct as they've like gotten away from just being like, oh, we're just going to try to be like New Japan or try to be like ROH. Like, I think them, you know, hitching their wagons to someone like Eddie Kingston, like, it makes them feel like a more unique promotion. So even if you are an AEW fan, like, why do you want it to just be like another promotion? Like, just watch New Japan if you want that.
Right. It's like, I don't watch AEW because I don't really like AEW. Like, I don't really need AEW and New Japan to mix, or, you know, it just doesn't really appeal to me at all. So, but I get it. Like, if some AEW fans, you know, want, I mean, some AEW fans really just want that fucking Golden Lovers reunion more than anything else on earth. And, like I said, I think everybody knows, like, I don't really have to get the dance around the story anymore because I think it's kind of out there. Like, Bix is tweeting about it and stuff. I mean, there's bigger roadblocks, if stories are to be believed, than just the fact that they're in separate companies, you know?
So, yeah.
I mean, some people think that story is bullshit. I kind of think, you know, there's enough smoke to that fire at this point that I tend to think it's at least partially true. But, you know, talking about the merch money story from, before they left for AEW. So, I don't know. It is what it is. But I definitely don't, obviously don't miss, like, I mean, the only thing when I think about Kenny in New Japan, like, the only thing I would really like to see is, like, another Omega Naito match or something. But, you know, I'll live.
Yeah. I mean, I think Omega will 100%, even probably with, like, AEW's blessing, at some point come back and do a, you know, New Japan stuff similar to what he did for DDT. And eventually it will be in New Japan's, like, best, you know, to do like almost like a Jericho thing where he comes in for a few dates or something like that. I think that's probably the most likely way that you're going to see a relationship, not some sort of full-time talent exchange or anything like to that level.
Right. And like, I think eventually, like, you know, talking like 2022 or something, maybe something like that can happen. I mean, if people don't know, we're still in the middle of a fucking global pandemic too. So it's like, even if the two sides wanted to work together tomorrow, it wouldn't really be that easy. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know where we're on this. I kind of get think we can move off this stupid topic. So let's talk about the G1 climax, which just had night 8 from, actually not just had, it was up back on Thursday. But look, there were no shows between Thursday and Sunday, so I saved this one for the free recording here. But yeah, it was from Nagaoka, Thursday, October 1st. I would say this was one of the weaker shows that G1 so far, not like a show I hated or anything. I mean, some people seem to really hate it. There were, you know, still a few matches I liked, but like, as far as like a night that, like comparing it to some of the earlier ones, I think it was probably the weakest show. For sure the weakest B-block show. Probably the weakest show overall. Maybe, I'd have to really think about it. I didn't like that A-block show that much in Korakuen, because I really didn't like that Shingo Ishii match at all. But
yeah, see, I would disagree with you being this being one of the weakest shows. You know, I think that for me, I have only one match on this whole show below 3 stars. Mm. You know, spoiler warning. But I think that generally what I like about the B block shows in general is that I just feel like there's a lot of variety. Right. Even outside of like Yano, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. has been like one of the highlights of the tournament because he just stands out a lot. And, you know, Yoshihashi's run feels, like, totally different than anything else going on right now. And even, like, you know, Naito's matches have been, like, typical New Japan style, but they've just been, like, really, really good. So even though, you know, I don't think this show has any blowaways. I think some of the A-block shows, while they might have, like, one match that's really good, you know, typically I feel like the average is just so much worse.
Yeah, I feel like this debate has gone on a lot, especially in like the Voice of Wrestling Slack and stuff. There's basically like two types of New Japan fan, right? There's a type that like is just blown away by the A block every night. They're getting like, you know, exactly what they want from these A block matches, and you know, that's all they really want out of the G1 is just like, you know, all these A block matches, and they don't care about the B block at all because it doesn't have the quote unquote work rate. And I think you and I are probably the other type of fan that really likes the B block, just really likes the wrestlers in the B block. And like, you know, even if it doesn't always have the highest end, you know, quote unquote work rate, you know, we really enjoy like the personalities and like, you know, the differences between the wrestlers and stuff. Like, I mean, there's a lot of wrestlers in B block that I just personally like, even if like, you know, I'm always going to kind of be a Hiroki Goto stan. Even when his shoulder is clearly falling off and he's having to do 3-minute matches because of that. I really like Kenta. I like Sonata, who I know you hate. I like...
I'll save it for the main event, Doug.
Okay. I like Evil. I don't know. I actually don't know your feelings on Evil, but...
I like him a lot more now that he makes the worst people in the world extremely angry.
It's like, wow, you're like the Republican of New Japan.
And look, if Dick Togo is attached to you, Dick Togo could be seconding, like, you know, Hitler? I don't know. I'm trying to think of a bad wrestler, but I was like, no, it has to be stronger than that. If Dick Togo is, like, coming out with you, you know, cutting some promos, looking mean, I'll probably root for you, so.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. But, I mean, I like Evil. I really like Yoshihashi, especially in this tournament. You know, Tanahashi's been good. I mean, Tanahashi picks the spots at this point, but it's understandable. You know, I like, and obviously, I have a higher tolerance for the Toriano stuff than a lot of other people. The only guy in this in the B block that's really annoyed me so far is Juice, but like, I don't really blame him. It's just like, it's really hard for him to do what he does, I guess, with the clap crowds. But yeah, I just feel like he's been kind of a drag on some of these shows.
Yeah, how do you feel about the clap crowds?
They don't really, I mean, they don't bother me that much. I mean, it depends on the, I feel like as long as they're still, like, doing the clapping enough to, like, it's not complete silence, it doesn't really bother me that much. You know, I definitely think it bothers other people way more than it bothers me. But
yeah, I would count myself in that. I think it does take a lot away from certain types of matches. You know, I think, like,
you know what? Do you know why I really noticed it in Shingo Ishii? Because that went on forever. And, like, I knew with, like, a... Like, with that's why I'm so surprised, like, the A Block people are so into this. Because it's, like, those type of matches really need, like, more of a crowd reaction, I think.
Yeah. Because, so, I mean, the crowds love Ospreay and they love Shingo. And they love, like, a lot of the guys in that block. And you'd think they'd be going insane for these matches.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, it depends on the type of match, like you said. But, you know. But yeah, and then like you mentioned, I mean, Naito and Zach to me are like the two MVPs of the entire tournament so far. So like they're just having outstanding matches pretty much every time out. So, but yeah, so let's start here with the opener, which was a Young Lion match, Yota Tsuji and Gabriel Kidd going to a 15-minute time limit draw. This was the first of these Young Lion matches that went to a time limit draw. I know Joe Lanza. Was speculating that maybe it's because they had to go so short on Goto and Zach because of Goto maybe having a legitimate injury, which could be possible. It was a little, I mean, I guess having to go 15 minutes, it was a little more dull than your average Young Lion match during this tour for a while. But the crowd did get like really into Gabriel Kidd having Tsuji in that Boston Crab towards the end of it. You know, the countdown to the time limit, obviously, like, really increased the excitement level as well. But I don't know, I saw people saying like this was like a really good match, and to me, I wouldn't even put it as like the top tier of the Young Lion matches on this tour. But you know, just a, like, I went like 3 stars on it. It was fine. But it just, I definitely like some of the other ones better, even though, you know, the countdown is exciting and all that.
Yeah, I think I liked it a little bit more than you. I was probably more in the 3.25, 3.5 range, but I think the thing that I liked the most about it was that it felt, you know, I don't know how much notice they got. Yeah, you know, like you said, the Goto match, if that affected things, like how, when they knew this was going to be a draw. But it actually builds off of the, you know, the previous Young Lion matches pretty well. And the sort of like how the matches have been ending and then blowing past those as like false finishes. I actually think it sort of, you know, almost tells like a nice little story, which makes me interested like what they're going to do for the rest of the tour. Because it did, you know, a lot of times I feel like a draw like this, sometimes when you've had like clear winners for the past matches, so it's like, okay, well, where do you go after this? But I don't know, I do enjoy, I much prefer these over like having to skip like 4 tags or like getting caught and be like, oh, maybe I'll watch a tag and that's always bad. Like a nice like 6 to 7 minute like Young Lion match where I can just, you know, get caught up in that story, I think is much preferable for
me. I mean, this is like one of the things where I actually hope they keep it the same after COVID, because it is a lot. It just makes these shows a lot easier to have. I mean, I usually just fast forward through all the tags either anyway, but I don't have to do that anymore. So, you know, it's just easier every day.
Yeah.
Match number 2, Juice Robinson defeating Toru Yano in 6:42 with a roll up. This was pretty fun. I always feel like an idiot, like, breaking down Yano matches. It's like,
like, let's go into the work.
That's not really what they're supposed to be done for. Like, did it amuse me? It amused me. You know, there was some stuff early on where, like, Yano was, like, telling Juice to, like, he gave him a t-shirt and asked him to wear it during the match and then tried to roll him up when he turned his back to put it on. That was kind of funny. And, like, sprayed water in his eyes from the spray bottle he has, and but Juice kicked out of that roll-up as well. And then Juice got, like, very angry and just, like, stood up and started shouting, like, you're an asshole at him, which I thought was funny. And, like, ripped his t-shirt off and, like, wiped his ass with it and, you know, stepped on it in the ring. And Nicole entered the room the moment I said wiped his ass with it and was very confused. But there you go. It was a t-shirt. That's what he was doing. Wiping his ass with a t-shirt. He's still giving me a look.
But listen, I don't know if that makes it any clearer.
Yano looked a little hurt, actually, when he was doing that, which is kind of funny. But yeah, then the tape, where, like, Juice had, like, hop up and down.
Yeah, Yano was selling the, you know, selling the eyes after, or like in the post match, where he's like, I couldn't see anything. So,
but yeah, Juice, like, yelled at him to eat shit and then gave him left hand to God. But yeah, there you go. The only thing I would say, I mean, I gave it 3 stars. The roll-ups at the end were kind of stupid. Like, they just look kind of slow motion or something. But, you know, I was enjoying it until the finish. So, like, who cares about star ratings in a Yano match? I give them for completion's sake. But, but yeah, I mean, like, the Yano matches, the funniest thing about them is how angry people get about them. It's like, they're 6.5 minutes long, guys. Who gives a fuck?
And it's like, yeah, I said earlier about B-block shows. It really does make this like the block of variety. And, you know, for me, it's not like Yano is having, you know, what was his run like 2 years ago where he had like the Zack Sabre Jr. match and like he had like some matches that were like actually legitimately great.
Oh, when he was like pretending he was going to do real wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. So this match is definitely more average, but I do think that he's been good. I really like the Sonata match. I think that was like a really fun one. So.
Yeah. And they always have like weird chemistry. I've noticed those two.
But, yeah.
The next match, Hirooki Goto losing to Zack Sabre Jr. in 3:59 at the European Clutch. Oh, I forgot to mention the last match. That was Yano's first loss, which is kind of funny. But yeah, Yano's now 3-1, and Juice is also 3-1. This one, meanwhile, Zack got up to 2-2 and dropped Goto to 1-3. Did you see Zack's post-match promo, by the way?
I did.
Yeah.
As a Goto mark, it really did hurt. Like, I appreciate the effort, but it did. It, like, pierced me through my soul.
He's like, the G and... I can't do a British accent. He's just like, the G and G1 stand for Goto, huh? And I just starts laughing and, like, walking away.
Yeah, it's a 20-minute... It's, like, a 20-second promo, because he just walks in frame. That's all he says, and he just laughs.
I know. Speaking of Nicole, she thought that was really funny. But, yeah. We start with some cool little chain wrestling. Zack... You know, of course, like, he tried to get an arm breaker on Goto right away, thanks to that big bandage, like, over his right arm and shoulder. And Zack, like, went really hard at Goto's injury, even after he made the ropes, which makes sense. He was, like, stomping away in the corner and, like, shoved the ref down. Goto came back with the Ushigoroshi really quickly, which should have been the clue, I guess, that this was not going to go long at all. But he was still selling the bad arm really well. He went for the middle kick of death. That big charge up middle kick he does.
Yeah.
Does that have an actual name? I think it does, right? I can't remember what it is.
I don't know. It's some sort of Dragon Ball Z. Yeah.
But yeah, Zack rolls him up out of the GTR, and that's it. So, very quick match here. I enjoyed it a lot while it lasted. I guess I'll go 3 stars again. But I was looking forward to this one a lot, so I was pretty disappointed it was sub 5 minutes. I assume, like I said, there's like Goto's real injury was acting up here, and they decided... I mean, he's going to get a lot of days off after this, so hopefully he's ready to go by Tuesday. But, yeah, they clearly didn't want to have him doing a longer match here.
Yeah. Well, considering I watched the entire G1 in, like, the span of, like, 3 days, I welcomed very much an extremely short match. But I really like this. Also, like I said, I think for, you know, if you're doing a 4-minute match, this is about as good as you can do. So I gave it 3.5. I thought it was like, you know, for the effort and the amount of planning that needs to get, you know, this match from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And, you know, get Goto offense too, despite his injury. I think it worked really well. And I think, you know, the best thing I think about Zack Sabre Jr. is that his matches feel like they can end any time.
Yeah.
Which does not really feel the case for like many wrestlers in New Japan at all. You know,
that was one of the things that I thought really made Zack and Naito work was like, even though that match ended up going like, you know, 27 minutes, there were a lot of points where it felt like it could have ended much sooner, which is not normally the case for those like pushing 30-minute, you know, New Japan main events.
Yeah, a lot of the longer New Japan matches, you can sort of tell. It's like, well, it's not going to end because you're going to at least need to, like, you know, like, I always think of, like, Evil Okada matches. Like, they're going to have some rainmaker and everything is equal. Like, the counter just works too well, so they're going to do it a few times. And, you know, a few matches, Naito has, like, a few of those, too, where, you know, the Destino is just too perfectly countered into a few different moves. They're like, well, we got to do the counter sequence. It's going to be great. Where, yeah, I think Sabre Jr., yeah, not only is it great in this tournament, but you could make a case that, you know, over his career, he's been like one of the best wrestlers in the world. He might be like a top 5-ish wrestler in New Japan right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's been really, really... I mean, he's one of those guys that, like, when he gets pushed to the background a little bit, because I think he's clearly been positioned as like the number 2 in his own tag team, that, like, you can kind of forget how good he is. And then once this tournament... I mean, I thought those Dangerous Techers Golden Lovers matches were all... Or Golden Lovers. Golden Aces matches were both awesome. Anyway... but like just seeing him in this tournament as a singles guy again, it's like, oh yeah, this guy is like actually amazing. So, you know, I know not everybody feels that way. Like people find his matches boring or whatever. It's like, we watch wrestling for very different reasons, I guess. I don't know what to tell you. If you can't get into like, you know, Zack and Naito exchanging holds, then like, I don't know what to tell you. That's what I'm here for. So,
yeah, I could definitely see, you know, I guess I would like to see him maybe move up and do some sort of, you know, whether it's the U.S. title or the IC title or something, give him some sort of like upper card.
Well, he was supposed to challenge Moxie for the U.S. title before the COVID thing happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that kind of was probably part of the idea too. But I mean, you know, he's been in a bunch of semi-main events with Taichi and stuff, but you know, it's just not used to him being in a tag team, I guess.
Yeah.
Our next match was Hiroshi Tanahashi defeating Yoshihashi in 18-41 with the high fly flow. So Tana goes to 2-2 and Yoshi goes to 1-3. This fucking rocked. This was awesome. And
very good.
Yoshihashi, I keep taking a victory lap on this one because I saw so many fucking people complain about him getting picked for this G1. And I just wanted to be like, Yoshihashi is, first of all, he's, at worst, he's fine. You know, he's not like he's ever actively bad, really. The only times I can remember him being actively bad were like a few tag team matches where he wasn't that great. But like, for the most part, he's usually fine at worst. And if he gets going and is motivated, and I was like, why the fuck wouldn't he be motivated to be back in his G1 after he missed it last year? He can be great. And he's been great. This is the second 4-star match I have for him already out of 4 shows. And like, you know, this match and the Evil match were really, really good. And some of his other matches have been really good too. I mean, what was his other match? I don't remember now. The only one I didn't really like was the Sonata one, which wasn't that good. Oh, the Juice match, which I gave like 3.5 stars. Yeah. So like, he's having a great G1. I mean, you know, he's been one of these guys that like people complained about that they should not have complained about because he's really good. So. You know.
Yeah, I went 3.5 on this. I think it maybe went a tiny bit longer than I would want. Yeah, it went 19 minutes. But yeah. I actually think that this is probably this is probably going to be Yoshihashi's. I mean, it might be his like biggest moment in the company, depending on what happens in coming years, where he is, you know, he gets this sort of push. He gets to go toe to toe with like a lot of big stars. And yeah, I feel like if this is his ceiling, then he's like making the most of it. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, he's a perfect guy to be an underdog. And that's obviously what he's going to be in this G1. And just, you know, it's worked really well. I mean, you people get like really wrapped up with these blocks. And it's like, you don't want like 10 guys who are all like, you know, superstar.
Superstars, yeah.
Yeah. You don't want like 10 guys who are all like fucking superstar main eventers because then like you're telling the same story over and over again, which I think has kind of crept into the A block, except for like Yujiro, and Yujiro's matches have been good for the same reason, because he can go out there and play underdog against like Minoru Suzuki, and it just feels like so different from what else is going on in the A block. And here it's like, you know, Yoshihashi, you have a guy who can go in there and make a Tanahashi look dominant and really get to, you know, get behind the story where Yoshihashi is like trying to knock off this main event. It's just a very, like, you don't want 10 guys that are all the same, so I'm happy to have Yoshihashi here.
Yeah. Do you miss the guest appearances in the G1 at all?
A little, I guess. Yeah. It depends on who we're talking.
It depends on the guests.
There have been some guests who have been pretty bad over the years. So.
I was just thinking, because I'm watching like Mayor Fuji versus Nakajima today and just thinking like, you know, thinking about that G1. But I actually think that sometimes that a lot of people clamor for that, but it sort of prevents you from telling stories like this. You know, it prevents you from ever giving someone like Yoshihashi or, you know, even to like Juice or someone on that level, or Yujiro, you don't give them anything to do during the year. So it's just like, well, what's the point of having them if this is the reason you keep them for tournaments like this?
Exactly. The notable stuff that they'll have in this match. First of all, Tanahashi, God bless him for selling that stupid butterfly lock like it was like literally killing him, because it's like he'll do that for anything, I guess, because that hold is so stupid. But Tanahashi almost made it look good. And there was like this great little spot too where Yoshi like went for the karma, but Tanahashi basically countered it out of it with like a modified twist and shout, just basically threw the dude down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that looked really cool. But yeah, I mean, there was a, I liked his face too when he went for the finish. Like, so he, you know, they kept trading moves before that. Like Yoshihashi almost rode Tanahashi up when he tried the Texas Cloverleaf. That was an awesome near fall. And then he ducked the sling blade, hit a pretty great dragon suplex, and just dropped Tanahashi on his head with that, and got his double knees for a 2 count. Then that like fisherman's buster head drop thing that I think does have a name, but you know, to give him a second shout out in this episode, I'm not Andrew Rich. I don't know all these move names, but yes, that got a 2 count. And then Tanahashi you know, he, like, fights out of the karma again. Yoshi's, like, coming back with this chop and, you know, like, basically chopping him pretty hard. And then Tanahashi hits the sling blade for a two count. And then as he goes up to the top rope, he almost has this look on his face like, I've had enough of this shit. Yes. Like, he's trying to put this dork away, which looked great. Tanahashi comes out with some awesome, like, and very appropriate facial expressions, and that one definitely was one of them. And then he hits the standing crossbody high fly flow, then the real one, and that gets the pin. But yeah, I went 4 stars flat on this. I really liked it. I'm very into the Yoshihashi storyline here. So, you know, I almost wish he hadn't beaten Sonata. I wish he was still 0-4, but, you know, I definitely am enjoying his run in this tournament.
Yeah. Do you know who he faces on the last night? I was wondering if he would be positioned as some sort of spoiler to someone.
I don't think he is. I think he's facing somebody who's definitely going to be out of it, but let me double check. I believe it is... no, I can't think of it, so let me just wait. He's facing Yano.
Well, you know, he's going to prevent Yano from going to the finals.
maybe Yano could still be alive. Who knows?
They could talk another loss for the Yano stands.
The semi-main event, Evil defeating Kenta in 1540 with the Evil, gets him to 2-2, and Kenta's now at 2-2. This was a little disappointing to me. I was really expecting this to be good, because I've enjoyed both of them in this G1 so far, but, like, it was pretty boring for a lot of the way. It was, like, just Evil tossing Kenta shoulder first in the post and stuff, and, you know, Kenta's selling was actually pretty damn good, but he's one of these dudes whose character is, like, such a complete asshole that it's, like, really difficult for me to watch the match and, like, you know, sympathize with him and be, like, you know, really feel bad for him for getting beat up. It's just like, well, you know, maybe it's different for people who are not Naito stands, but it's hard for me to sympathize much with Kenta. But, you know, this was, like, a weird one where, like, the ref bumps at first were actually kind of, like, improved the match, I thought. Like, it really picked up after the first ref bump where, like, you know, Kenta grabbed his big red briefcase, just nailed Dick Togo with it when he asked him to hand it over, which just was kind of funny. And then hit Evil with it too, which I think was the first cheating he's done during this entire tournament so far, which I thought was interesting. And then hit him the double foot stomp and the Bushiaku knee kick, and Evil kicked out. And then Evil, like, almost came back into the role of, like, the valiant babyface trying to come back from Kenta's cheating at first, because he hit, this Darkness Falls and the big lariat. Just a very different perspective on Evil than we've seen recently. And then Kenta, like, hit this really cool series of slaps right to the face just as we got the 15-minute mark. Went for the go-to-sleep. But here's where things got stupid. So Dick Togo recovered and got on the apron. Kenta throws him in the ring for some reason. Dick Togo tries to low blow him right in front of the ref. And it's like, I don't know why. Like, Kenta, just let him do it. That'd be a DQ. Even in this company, it'd have to be a DQ. And 2 points. But Kenta blocks it instead, tries to go to sleep on him. Togo grabs Red Shoes from up on Kenta's shoulders, and that lets Evil low blow Kenta from behind and give him the STO for the pin. It's one of these things that's so stupid it almost worked, but, like, the actual visual of Dick Togo grabbing Red Shoes just looked very dumb. Like, from up on Kenta's shoulders. So, you know, I don't know. The guy was really getting into it finally down the stretch. Like I said, everything after Kenta grabbed the briefcase. But the ending was so fucking stupid, I took points off for it. So, like, I went 3.25.
Yeah, I liked it even more than you. I did, yeah, I didn't have... I would say that Kenta is someone that I have struggled connecting with, although I do think he's been good in this tournament. And I agree that he had some issues, like, trying to play the babyface during the match. But then, like, even as... I thought maybe that they were going to play that in the post-match promo a little bit, but he actually, you know, was just calling the camera guy fat and saying that's his reason for losing. Not the most baby face position to take, I think. But yeah, I think the finish just really let it down. And every time I see, like, Dick Togo, like, get involved a lot, it just makes me want him in the G1. I was like, why isn't this just Dick Togo versus Kenta? Like, why is Gato doing this to me? Where it's like, these, you know, we're so close to this. Yeah, we have all these other weird matches. Like, why can't we just get Dick Togo on some of these shows?
Yeah, I guess it's just not going to happen, but it is notable, I guess. The main event of the evening, I guess we'll hear it. You did tease us earlier. Tetsuya Naito loses to Sonata in 27:08 with a moonsault. So Sonata gets his first win. He is now 1-3, and Naito takes his first loss. He's 3-1. I really like this, except for the end, which had issues, which I couldn't really go 4 stars on as a result. But, you know, I thought it was really fun a lot of the way. I went like 3 3/4. Had this been like an awesome, awesome match like Naito's had with a lot of other people in this tournament so far. I mean, this was my lowest rated Naito match of the tournament so far. You know, it definitely would have been like a home run show, I guess, because the undercard was, you know, mostly for the most part, very enjoyable. But the fact that this was like a little disappointing is why, you know, definitely took down the rest of the show to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, oftentimes I've definitely called Sonata maybe the worst major league wrestler, you know, in the business. You know, definitely very boring. And I have to say, in the words of John Ensman, the New Japan fan rep guy, I was in paradise watching Sonata during this match. I think, I don't know if it, maybe his effort is the problem that I usually have with him, or maybe Naito just knows him super well from being in the same faction with him, and that's why this match clicked for me. But I thought, yeah, like you, I think basically until the finish, this match was awesome. You know, I think that the, you know, he is not as awkward as you think. You know, I think he can be like fired up. He can show fire, that he can have like these more heavy hitting matches. Like this match had a lot of back and forth. It wasn't just like tons of skull end or anything like that. And it just makes me wonder like why he isn't like this all the time.
I think he needs somebody else to lay out the match for him, probably. Because Naito's, you know, famously like kind of a genius of like match layouts. That's why he got that, you know, like the wrestling genius nickname originally. So, you know, I don't know. It's, I'm sure he benefited from Naito, you know, being able to lay this match out for him.
Yeah, I think the finish was just, there's so much like awkwardness in trying to, you know, get quite to the finish. I guess it's sort of like the pre-finish, like, you know, in the last like 2 or 3 minutes. That's sort of where they had some issues, like getting on the same page.
By the way, I think I said wrestling genius. That's Keiji Muto. I should have, of course, said Stardust genius, but there you go. Is it Keiji? Yeah. Keiji Muto was wrestling genius, right? Wasn't that his nickname?
I guess. I mean, what am I supposed to know? I feel like you just made that up.
I think Keiji.
The wrestling genius is, you know, King James Chris Hero. That's the real wrestling genius. He has this whole subreddit that's called the Wrestling Genius.
That is true. I think that was Keiji Muto's nickname at one point, though. I think it was like, especially the like 99 through like, oh, or like 2000, 2001 like comeback period with like the shaved head. I think that was like wrestling genius, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
I started watching wrestling in 2014, so I mean, I have gone back and watched a lot of 90s wrestling, but mainly just like rings. So it's just, yeah, it's not the same. It's not my forte.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that despite the awkwardness, like most of the early parts of the match were super good, and yeah, I think even, you know, it got over Sonata having like maybe the worst finisher out any. I mean, I think the skull end, honestly, I think changing that could make all of his matches better. I think it really could make like that level of difference. The amount that he leans on is like a transitional move or something to set up his finish, and the fact that it always looks terrible. I mean, even just a small change like that, I feel like could go a long way for him.
I agree. Yeah, for sure. There's one spot I wanted to call it in particular, because it's one of these spots that maybe was even too brutal for the spot in the match. Like Sonata at one point, they're fighting the top rope, and Sonata drops down behind Naito and like drop kicks him right into the fucking post, shoulder first. Just looks so brutal, like one of those really insane Naito bumps. And then Sonata gives him like this. I was going to ask for your opinion on this move, because I couldn't tell if this looked cool or not. But Sonata gave him like a neck breaker across his knee with both of them jumping off the ropes. Naito saw it like he was shot, so that helped a lot.
Yeah.
But I couldn't actually tell if the move looked cool or not. I think it's the first time Sonata's ever done it.
I don't think I haven't watched it back in like slow motion or anything, but I liked it live. I like any move that feels like it has like a big impact.
Yeah.
Even if it's based, you know, half of the wrestling moves that, even like huge wrestling moves, are basically just like, it's the person who's selling it just throwing themselves on the ground. That's like what wrestling is.
Yeah.
So I feel like looking into the minute details of a move to be like, well, actually he's DDDing himself when he does this. It's like, it's just, that's for nerds. Don't do that.
Yeah. Cause like a lot of moves, I mean, it's really noticeable obviously when there's a botch and like when the timing's off, because somebody might actually like just end up, like I can't remember what matches happened. I don't think it was this one, but like there was a spot with a DDT recently. It might have been Suzuki and Cobb or something, where like one of them went down way before the other, and you could just tell like it was a guy just flinging himself down to get DDT'd. But yeah, you know, Naito just started destroying Sonata with these back elbows. I love the back elbows that Naito does now. It's like the rawest addition to his arsenal, because like he does that with that wrist clutch too, and like, you know, it just looks so brutal. And he gave the audience a nice little like evil smirk here in between, like, yeah, I'm killing your hometown boy, who gives a shit. Also that he hasn't, Naito hasn't tried that Esperanza thing for a while. I think not since the evil match of Jingu, when they botched it real bad. It looked awesome here. Like, yeah, I think if Sonata took that better than anybody else has taken that so far.
Yeah, I think Naito's offense is just like so smartly put together, and it's clearly just been refined like over the years. But I think, you know, post his heel turn, this is like my, you know, it's probably my favorite since like the initial run, in terms of his moves are all so impactful now. He just like, he's dose knows how to chain everything together. And yeah, this is like what I want out of like Sonata, to have like this type of, you know, you never think of like Sonata's moveset as like high impact or anything. He needs to take some notes from Naito and just diversify a little bit.
And Naito did like this cool like running inverted DDT that was set up Destino style, but was not a Destino. I thought was pretty cool. I don't know if I've ever seen him do that before. And then Sonata like countered the real Destino into a TKO in midair. That looked awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But yeah, so then we get the finish. Like I said, the problem here was was like the final fucking, you know, the big botch was around the 25-minute call. He goes for the running Destino. Sonata kind of like freezes and, you know, just kind of fucks up. But what are you gonna do? But yeah, I mean, like, Naito, you know, at one point, he goes for Valentia, and Sonata countered with, like, this knee to the head in midair. That looked pretty good. And then Sonata got a counter with Destino on Naito when Naito went for Valentia again. So everything else after that, you know, running Destino was good. But, like, yeah, I mean, I decided to go 3 3/4 because, like, it was just a little too botched at the end for me to go 4 stars. But I did really enjoy it, so.
Yeah, one of the things you said that was interesting to me too was Naito, I mean, obviously playing more heelish in this match, but I don't know if he's his post-match promo, he was like going full babyface. Yeah, it was maybe one, in terms of his post-match promos, like one of his most flat out like white meat babyface promos I've seen, which I was pretty surprised by, like after that match. But I think it's also just to give Sonata like the shine a little bit.
But Naito's next match is Yoshihashi. I cannot wait for that. I'm kind of mad it's not the main event, but what are you gonna do? Semi-main. But all right, so let's update the B block standings here. We have a tie for first place with Juice Robinson, Toru Yano, Tetsuya Naito, all tied for first, 3-1, 6 points. Tanahashi, Zack Sabre Jr., Kenta, and Evil, all 2-2 for 4 points, and then tied for last, Goto, Yoshihashi, and Sonata, all 1-3 for 2 points. So we'll see who gets on a run now here as we're all about halfway through, you know, 4 out of the 9 matches. I also, do you have like a top 10 list for your favorite matches or anything, or no?
I don't have it off the top of my head, but I would say that, you know, for me, the only match of the G1 so far that I would consider a sort of like match of the year contender is probably Ibushi Ishii, which, no surprise there. I really like their match, you know, their last match, their last G1 match. I just think that's worked really well.
It's an 8th place for me, but
yeah. And I would say outside of that, the other match that I would say is also like either just a shade below match of the year, like right on that, would probably be the Naito Zack Sabre Jr. match.
That's my number 2 match. You didn't like Naito Tanahashi?
No, I liked it. I gave it 4 stars, but like, okay. I'm a tough star rater, and you know, but okay. Like I said, I would say that, and then probably I actually really liked one of the Suzuki matches. I think it was Suzuki Yujiro. I don't know why. I think it's Suzuki Taichi. That was awesome.
Oh, I gave that 4 stars. Yeah. So yeah, let me go through my top 10 real quick. 10th place and 9th place, both 4 stars. Yoshihashi versus Evil from night 4 in 10th place. And then Taichi versus Suzuki from night 3 in 9th. Then 8th through 4th are all 4 1/4. So 8th place, Ibushi versus Ishii from night 5. 7, White versus Shingo from night 1. 6. Okada versus Taiji from night 7. The only Okada match I think I have higher than 3.25 so far. Taiji saved Okada's G1. Yes, that is true. The only Okada match I have higher than 3.25 so far. Kenta versus Zack in 5th place, night 6. Suzuki versus Ishii from night 1 in 4th. And then my top 3, Ibushi versus Jay White from night 3. I went 4.5. Second place, Naito versus Zack from night 4. I went 4.5. And first place, Naito and Tanahashi from night 2. I went 4.75. So, Naito Tanahashi is definitely like third place on my match of the year list. I think I put Naito and Zack on my match of the year list here. I think I put like 6th or 7th. So those are two. Those are the two matches that are, I guess, match of the year level so far for me in the G1. So,
yeah. More importantly, for the standings for that Voices of Wrestling G1 Pick'em, I'm tied for 34th, but basically tied for like 3rd. I have 28 points and doing great. Sadly, if you know, hopefully I'm not doing too well because I did pick Will Ospreay as my winner through some roundabout dumb logic. So if that happens and I win, you know, I'll just probably be more upset at myself for what I wrought.
And I guess the other thing I can update really quick is the average star ratings for everybody since we're about halfway through. So probably no surprise.
Are you logging on to the Grapple app or no. Where we're getting these?
I have a spreadsheet. Okay,
the cage match inmates.
A spreadsheet. So I have no surprise to most people. Probably I have Naito in first place with a 4.25 average rating so far. So just killing it so far. Second place, a bit surprising. I have Jay White in second with a 4-star average rating. I've really enjoyed him so far in this G1, other than an Okada match. And then third place, I have a tie between Zach and Taichi, both at 3.88. So, oh, and Tanahashi too, also at 3.88. So those are, that's pretty much, oh, let's say a fifth place person. Or no, I guess that would be three through fifth. Okay, so that's enough. I don't have to go through everybody. But if you're wondering who my bottom guy is so far, I guess it's Yano at 2.75, but really who cares about Yano? So let's see. Yujiro 2.94, and then Okada at 3.0.
I was really hoping Okada would be last.
No, Okada's like third to the bottom with 3.06. He probably was last before that Taichi match, but I really, really like that Taichi match, so it kind of saved him. Because I hate his first three matches. I mean, I get it. It's a storyline, blah, 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 but like they were just crappy matches. Just not at all enjoyable to watch, you know.
So my issue with that, the whole thing where it's like, well, Okada is having bad matches because it's part of the story. It's like, well, isn't every match part of a story? Like, it doesn't mean you have to be bad. I mean, you can work more slow or more methodical, but it doesn't mean you have to work bad. Like, that's not the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, after the Taichi match especially, I almost want to give, like, as much blame to the opponent as Okada, because it's like, Okada and Taichi made that style of match work for what they're trying to do, with Taichi beating the shit out of Okada's back and Okada selling throughout and not having to do a ton, and then, you know, finally coming back and figuring out a way to win with that, you know, what's it called, the money clip. But, like, I didn't feel like Ibushi or Jay White did a very good job of structuring a match around that and making it interesting and make it entertaining. Now, maybe it also was the fact that this was, like, this one was third from the top on a Korakuen and not, like, the main event like those Ibushi and White matches were. I'm pretty sure it was much shorter. I just want to double check that before I talk out of my ass, but I think it was like under 20 minutes, which I'm sure helped. Yes, it was 17:03, which to me was like, that's like the ideal amount of time to have this type of match where Okada's just going to like sell and sell and sell and sell and then come back and win. Whereas like, you know, the Jay White match, well, it was only a little bit longer, 18:48. So I can't really play in the match length there. That match just was boring and kind of stupid. And the Ibushi match, I'm sure, was longer, though.
Yeah. Okada and Jay White have such a weird, like, ups and downs, because I almost exclusively don't like any of their matches. But then, like, one of their G1 matches is super good, and their match at Wrestle Kingdom that's, like, only, like, 15 minutes long, like, owns. So it's just, like, I don't understand why their matchup can only be great or terrible.
Yeah, because the MSG match sucked, too.
Yeah,
but yeah, like the Tokyo Dome one was awesome. I did really like that G1 match too. I think I know the 2018 one. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I hope Okada picks up from here, but we'll see. I mean, he's in like lower profile spots for a little while, which might help him. Like up on the next card, which we'll talk about in a second, he's third from the top again. So I think he probably will. Just the style he's working right now probably benefits from being in a lower profile spot than, you know, instead of being in main events all the time. So
yeah.
So the next show, October 5th in Takamatsu, tomorrow as we're recording this. Again, that will be covered on the Omakase Patreon, patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. The opener is Yuya Uemura versus Gabriel Kidd. This is like the only pairing of the Young Lion matches that I feel like is kind of lacking in chemistry so far. Like, Tsuji and Uemura obviously are like these big Young Lion rivals, and, you know, Tsuji and Kidd have this feud going on, and Uemura and Kidd kind of have nothing. So I've definitely noticed it compared to the other two pairings. So,
yeah, that's why I was like wondering, it's like, how are they going to do the Young Lion matches going forward? Because when you build to like a climax, like a big draw, I feel like a lot of times for a Young Lion feud, that's like the end, or it's something that sets up like a future story. So it's just, yeah, what's going to go on with the Young Lions from here on out? Maybe they'll just try to tell like a new story from scratch with different opponents. So.
Yeah, maybe. Match two, Shingo Takagi versus Yujiro Takahashi. Shingo's got 2 points, and Yujiro still looking for his first win. Now the only person still looking for his first win since Sonata won. Match three, Jeff Cobb at 2 points versus Jay White at 6. That could be pretty good, actually. That could, a match that could be sneaky good, even though Cobb has been very uneven so far in the G1.
I could see that working, especially, you know, I don't know. I don't think they were never like in ROH or anything the first time. I don't know if they've ever wrestled before.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Match four, Okada at 4 points against Minoru Suzuki at 6 points. I really liked their match at, what's it called last year? The Royal Quest, the UK show. Thought that was pretty awesome. These two usually have really good matches together with one giant exception, that fucking New Beginning title match.
Every single... Oh. One match, I think it was from last year, that people didn't like as much, I really liked.
Yeah.
So I think I almost exclusively like this matchup, except for that super long, boring title match.
Yeah, where like Suzuki worked on his leg for 20 minutes and Okada was like, time to do some giant leap and drop kicks. And it's like, okay. But yeah, that's their only bad match, pretty much. Like, all their G1 matches are usually really good. You know, their other title matches and stuff, and their 2013 feud. So there you go. The semi-main event... Tomohiro Ishii at 2 points against Taichi with 6 points. This should own. They've had really good matches together, you know, all last year. So very excited for this one.
I think the show in general, like, you know, pretty much every match has potential. Even, you know, Shingo is someone that I've struggled to connect with a little bit this year. And getting him in like maybe a shorter match where he's just going to beat up someone instead of trying to do like a 20-minute like sprint around bomb fest. I think that could be good for him too. So yeah.
And then the main event, Kota Ibushi and Will Ospreay both at 6 points. The type of match, I'm sure there's a certain type of fan that like is counting down the moments until that match starts.
Yes, there are people soy facing just reading this.
I just rewatched their match on the Patreon for the five matches G1 episode. I did with Chris Sampson, their G1 match last year, and like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it was bad, but it was, like, way more underwhelming than I remembered. So, you know, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, well, I like their... Yeah, they worked at the Tokyo Dome, right? I'm not just imagining that. Yeah, I like that match. But I think Will Ospreay, in general, he's, like, working differently in a bad way. I think since coming up as a heavyweight, he's almost doing these more... He was doing, like, more of, like, trying to be the New Japan main event style, when that is, like, not what he's good at. He's good at just being, like, a dumb, flippy guy. He should just be like the best possible version of like Facade, but he chooses to try to be like some sort of smart worker, and that's my problem with him.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's just like, there is just like an exhaustion for me with him in general, with all the other stuff too. So it's like, yeah. I'm not, that definitely does affect my,
well, you know,
perception.
Along with Donald Trump, I think we can officially say we also do wish death upon Will Ospreay.
I am not gonna
also, we're also officially that endorsing that.
I'm not gonna co-sign that one. The Trump one is fine, but I'm not
put that on the Patreon episode, so then it's just, yeah, you have a little more legal help there.
So obviously, what was this? A parody.
Yeah, so, parody and Fortnite.
Yeah. There you go. So that's New Japan. We can move over to NOAH now for the NOAH N1 victory. This has been a really good tournament as well. I would say maybe it has not reached the absolute highs of the G1, but like a ton of stuff, you know, that I had in the 4-star range. So, you know, there were like two nights that were kind of crappy that you could easily skip. The two single cam ones, night two and whether you want to call it night five or night six, depending on how you, yeah, because of that doubleheader. But yeah, the two single cam shows really were not worth watching at all. Very easily skippable. But the rest of the shows were all really fun. So, you know, if you haven't been caught up, catching up with it or keeping up with it, definitely a lot of fun stuff in the N1. And I'll go I'll go through my top 10 matches after we talk about this.
Well, thanks for telling me to prepare my top 10 matches before. It's not like you host a professional podcast or anything. There must be all the efforts going to the Patreon episodes now.
Yeah.
I think the tournament hasn't really produced any match of the year contenders or anything, but yeah. I think in general, there's basically nothing bad. Everything pretty much bottoms out at like average, which helps a lot. And, you know, even though I think that the Noah heavyweights, like, you know, there could be a few shakeups could be nice. You know, I think having Mochizuki in and having Sakuraba in and having them both work like pretty distinct styles, I think that did help a lot with the variety.
Yeah. So the show we're talking about here is the final block show from Corken Hall just last night on October 4th. It was actually, today, Sunday, October 4th in Japan, but it was at 11:30 a.m. start time, so one of those awesome shows I can actually watch live at 10:30 Eastern. So definitely, if it was up to me, all Japanese wrestling shows have an 11:30 a.m. start time, so I greatly appreciate it. The opener was in the B block, Shuhei Taniguchi defeating Yoshiki Inamura in 4:36 with a face kick, and that moved him up to 2-3, and Inamura dropped or finished 0-5 winless, as I think a lot of people kind of thought he would. Mm-hmm. This was like, again, for a under 5 minute match, this was a lot of fun. I mean, they started out by just running right at each other. Madman Taniguchi just like clubbering Inamura as hard as he can with these double sledges and elbows, then dropping him right on his head with the German suplex. And then Inamura, like, you know, he rolled out of the way of some punt kicks, only for Taniguchi to take his head off of the lariat. Be a very quick and brutal match. Ends with the running punch from Shuhei for the pin. 3.25 for me. I thought this was quite a bit of fun while it lasted. And one of these matches that makes you wonder, like, how these Noah guys wake up in the morning. Like, what they must feel like. Because they beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, I would 3 stars on it. I think this is definitely the type of match that I want to see more on. Not only Noah shows, but tournament shows in general in, you know, Japan. Just because I think having these super short, like, either whatever you call them, sprints or even just like short matches or squashes, I think they really do they make the other matches stand out a lot. And I don't think that the main events and like the big matches on this show, I don't think they hit as hard if the top first two matches aren't like 5 minutes long.
Yeah, that's fair. Match two, Manabu Soya in the A block defeating Kazuchi Sakuraba in 5:57. So Sakuraba drops to 2-3 and Soya goes to 2-3. This was another short match, but like even more fun than the opener. You know, it's Sakuraba's grappling versus the big meat boy Soya. There was this spot that was like one of my favorite spots on either show, where like they go to do a test of strength, as you've seen in wrestling matches a million times over, but it's a fucking trap from Sakuraba to like take him down to a triangle. Yes. I thought it was so awesome. And Soya, his selling when Sakuraba got his key lock on before he was able to make the ropes to break. Awesome selling from Soya.
Yeah, I loved that.
Sakuraba tries to get it right back on, but Soya like reverses to a cover, and that's the pin. Sakuraba, as you've seen other times, just forgot there were pins, I guess. But yeah, I mean, like, super enjoyable while it lasted. I went 3.5, pretty much almost entirely for that test of strength trap spot, which is so awesome.
Yeah, I also went 3.5. I think that Sakuraba in general, you know, like with what we've been talking about, you know, with all of these matches, variety is just so important in these tournaments. And Sakuraba just having this feeling where he can just tap people out instantly, and, you know, he can go after your leg or your arm or anything and just instantly make it into like the nastiest looking hold in the world is just why he's in this tournament, even though he's like completely washed.
Yeah.
So, like, it still makes like most of his matches worth watching because he is doing something completely different. And Soya, I've like really enjoyed this tournament, you know, coming in with, you know, the red hair. And so it's been,
he looks so different from what he used to look like in
exactly.
Wrestling.
Yeah.
Looks like a totally different wrestler.
So. Yeah, but I think that he's really stepped up in the tournament. I think most of his matches. I think the Nakajima match was on the last show. Yeah. Was on one of the single cam shows. I like that a lot.
The third match here, Masaki Mochizuki losing to Masa Kitamiya in 9:23 at the Saito Suplex. An awesome finish, which we'll get to in a second. But that brings Kitamiya to 2-3. It dropped Mochizuki to 2-2-1 and eliminated him for the tournament. So he would have had a scenario where if he had won, and then if Kaito had won the main event, which did happen, of course, they would have tied to went on top of the A block and would have had to do some kind of wacky playoff. But getting pinned here eliminated him and made the main event a straight-up winner moves on, which I kind of figured would happen. But yeah, his match was basically like, you know, Mochizuki's kicks versus Kitamiya's suplexes. And it came to like a really abrupt end when Kitamiya like caught Mochizuki on the middle rope going for the Sankakagari and just gives him the Saito suplex off of there for the pin. It looks so awesome. I thought this was another really fun, but you know, on the short side, but a really fun match. I went like 3.5 on this.
Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot too. I think that Mochizuki, even though he wasn't like my MVP of the tournament, I think he was pretty good. And this is also the time of the night where I like started to notice merchandise, because there's someone holding up a Dragon Gate scarf when he came out, which first of all is betraying Noah Wrestling by doing that. But then right next to them was someone wearing like a David Starr independent shirt, which is just a bad move in October of 2020.
Well, they don't know. I don't know. Maybe they haven't heard. Maybe the news didn't travel. I mean, I've heard that like a ton of Japanese fans have no idea what the fuck people were talking about when it comes to Osprey. I can only imagine how hard it must be to like parse this with like your, you know, like maybe low level English / relying on an auto translator to figure out what the fuck people are talking about.
Yeah. So. Well, it makes me afraid. Like, what do I not know about Japanese wrestlers?
Exactly.
Like, Tadasuke texting minors or something. Yeah. Like, if anything could happen.
The only, what's it called? Jim Breakthrough, that guy from fucking Heat Up. That was like, that was like doing shit with minors. So like, hopefully that would break through if something like that happened. But yeah, I don't know. I think we have enough like multilingual Japanese wrestling fans that maybe, you know, that kind of stuff does make it through to us. But I don't know. There probably is stuff that we're missing.
Yeah, imagine if you never heard and someone told you today about like the Dragon Gate monkey. Like you just find out like 5 years later.
Yeah, it must be so weird. The next match, another tournament match here in the B block. Takashi Sugera defeats Kano in 16:04. The referee stop, front neck lock. So Sugera goes to 3-1-1 with 7 points. Kano goes 3-2 with 6 points and is eliminated. It left Sugera alive because if Mara Fuji could beat Nakajima in the last B block match, they would have tied and again had to go to a wacky playoff, but eliminated Kano since now Sugera had one more point than he did. But yeah, this match was again a lot of fun. You know, I thought the highlight to me was that corner cam for Sugera's big superplex, which like that looked awesome. And at one point they also just traded like some really nasty looking German suplexes. And you know, I'm a mark for a good German suplex. So I probably sound like a broken record, but this is another 3.5-star match for me. Thought it was very good.
Yeah, having the corner cam where it's just like, here's just a nice shot of Segura's body for a few seconds while he does the stall. Like it's like, that really is the ideal use for it. But yeah, I think that, I really enjoy this. Segura's one of my favorite wrestlers ever, so I'm pretty much always going to enjoy him. But, you know, I was thinking, one thing I was thinking today is like, Kano could use a different look, the sort of bowl cut look. He looks like a fan of like, you know, Young Lean or like Blade, like that type of white rapper crowd. I think he just needs a change up. He's a little hype beast right now. The red leather pants.
I really like Kano's look because he looks like, to me, he looks like some kind of like weird edgelord or something. And I think it kind of works. It's like, he's this incredibly serious man. It's like, he is the exact opposite of, you know, it doesn't have any humor at all to him, which I know some people don't like, but like, I don't know. I like having a guy like Kano around who's like, he's like, you will not disrespect me or pro wrestling Noah, and is very like, I don't, to me it matches his persona. So
yeah, he looks like the type of person who would go to McDonald's just to order the Travis Scott meal, like that type of person. So.
He looks like he's hanging out at a hardcore show or something. So I don't know, it works, I think. But
Yeah, match was great.
The next match was the Junior Rumble. Now, I heard some complaints from people. People hated this match.
Wow.
I mentioned Manabu earlier. He really hated this match. There's some other people who really hated this match. Now, if you're just parachuting in to Noah, I could see why you might not like this, because it just seems like a bunch of guys doing a bunch of stuff, probably. If you're deep in the Noah lore and you're like, you know, it's like, oh, all the Rattels are starting out here. It's a Rattels reunion. And then Ogawa just fucking walks out at one point because...
Yes, all of these things that undeniably own and are awesome. Like, these people, they might be controversial, but those people are wrong. These are all great.
He just walks out of the match because he doesn't give a shit. And the announcers are like, well, Ogawa banned the match. Let's move on. He's just an old man who doesn't give a fuck about a battle royal, and just, he was the first elimination. He just left. Yeah. It was like, what? It was so good. O'Hara, like, the other thing I liked was how hard O'Hara went at Kotoge when he came in. And, like, them in the same unit for the 2 seconds they were both in full throttle was always weird as hell to me. Because they, you know, they had the long fucking feud.
Yeah, exactly. They have like a blood feud. And it's like, well, we need someone for this unit, so get in here.
Yeah, so like Kano and O'Hara, obviously, against Momono's Seishun Tag. And like, it was just so stupid. They were in the same unit. So I'm glad that was rectified. You know, it just didn't, you know, it would have been like, did the Rock and Roll Express guys ever team up with the Midnight Express guys? Would have been like the Noah equivalent of that. So, you know. But yeah, this match was pretty fun, I thought, most of the way. There was, like, one very sloppy exchange between Yohei and Daisuke Harada that stuck out in my mind before they both got eliminated by Kotoge. And by the way, what the fuck, Kotoge? Like,
that was really strange.
You just got back together with this man, you just eliminate him like nothing to get at Yohei? I don't understand. But yeah, Kotoge got the win. It was a fun match. I don't usually rate Battle Royals, but... you know, it was a good time.
Yeah, I think it was a little odd that it's the longest match on the show.
Yeah.
I think maybe it could have been a little bit shorter.
That could be why people, like, it probably just felt very long to people who don't have any emotional impact with the Noah Junior division and they just want to get back to the M1 matches.
But you get, like, the Rattel sequence, you get, like, the Congo sequence, like, you get all these different units.
Yeah, the Congo thing was so fun with the three of them.
Yeah, exactly, I love that. But Porn to Osawa just getting, like, the shit beat up, it's hilarious.
Osawa is, like, he never gives a shit. He's, like, he's booking this, allegedly, and he always makes himself look like the biggest moron. It is pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, but, I think the Noah Juniors, you know, I said at the top of the episode, the Noah Juniors are like actually my favorite part of the promotion. And I think there's just, you know, if you hate fun, I can see you not liking them. But it's just like they have such a weird collection of guys who
emotionally. Hayashi is there now.
Exactly.
It's like,
exactly.
What the fuck?
It's just like all these like cast offs and like random guys and units that are just sometimes completely random and like people are turning on each other all the time.
They had that diagram at one point in the match. I'm like, well, that's going to be different probably by the time the match.
Yeah, exactly. Someone's turning on someone.
That sequence of the last Corkin. I know people got mad and hated it, but I was like, this fucking rocks. What is wrong with you? It's like, here comes full throttle. It's like, there were like three turns in that one. Like, first, I think Yohei turned on Harada, which I was like, good for you, Yohei. Why the fuck are you guys still teaming up together if Rattels is over anyway?
Exactly. Yeah,
and then, so that one made perfect sense. Then Kotoge comes out to help Harada, and it's like, okay, this one makes sense too. You guys, you know, broke up originally because Kotoge was going heavyweight, so... You know, I mean, he's been back in the junior division since last year. Might as well get back together. But then Full Throttle comes out. Yoshioka and O'Hara just like, you know what? Fuck you, Kotoge, for getting back together with Harada. We don't want him in the group. So they turn on him, and they're like, you know what? This Yohei guy, he seems pretty cool. And that happens all in the one. That all happened in like 5 minutes. Everything I just described.
Yeah, it's so weird because if you think about it, it's like they don't talk over anything. Like, it's just the language is fists. It's just like there's no talking. It's just constant combat.
Yeah.
The setup for this must have been, you know, what happened backstage to lead to this moment.
But yeah, like the only junior unit that ever stays stable, I feel like, is fucking the juniors and Sugira Gun. Like, that's about it. Like, everybody else just like constantly jumping and going around and like. You know, so I get it. I get that it can be hard to keep track of this shit, but it is a lot of fun. So there you go. But yeah, that's our Noah Jr. talk, I guess. And there's some matches on the final show too, so that'll be a pair of title matches should be fun.
Yeah, I definitely think those are going to be a highlight.
The semi-main event in the N1, the opposite of a highlight, Katsuhiko Nakajima defeating Naomi Chimarafuji in 16-25. Nakajima wins the B block with 4-1. Marufuji ends at 2-2-1. I don't know, man. I just can't deal with these Marufuji matches anymore.
He's just... listen, this is you sound like me talking, you know, throughout his entire career.
I used to like him, but like he just doesn't give a fuck anymore. I mean, like, you're in the semi-main event, a match beside the B block in the tournament. And it's like
with a guy you've worked, guy you've worked before.
Yeah, you know, and it's like let's do like 10 minutes of slow motion arm work. Why not? And then Nakajima like repeatedly doing his fucking corner choke thing. Sure didn't pick up the pace either, so he's not off the hook here either. But
yeah, I think that it's just not the right type of match. And I think, you know, when I like opened up the Abima player and saw that it was like on the shorter side, I was like, oh, that's probably, yeah, 15 minute match, like that sounds pretty like a great choice for this type of match. Like maybe they'll just do a sprint, maybe Nakajima will just kick him really hard and they'll be over, and then to work like this super methodical, like weirdly paced match where Mayor Fuji does like nothing, you know. It just didn't seem like a great choice. I will say the one thing that I liked is that Nakajima was working under a little bit, especially early on, which he's been working sort of like over a lot of people this tournament, just like kicking the shit out of people.
I mean, I didn't think the match was horrible. I mean, I get 2 3/4, but like, you know, cause it was pretty much all for the sequence where Nakajima like ducked all of Marufuji's signature kicks and then like answered with this awesome spinning uranage. That woke me up a little bit. And the end where he just finally kicked Marufuji's ass and finished him off clean was pretty damn good. But like, that was it though. Like, those are the highlights of a otherwise very boring match. So that kept it from being like, I don't know, like below 2.5 for me, but like, that's about it. So
yeah, if this wasn't Nakajima, this would be like a 1-star match against like most opponents, because Marufuji is just in total cruise control.
Yeah, he just doesn't give a shit. The main event, Kaito Kiyomiya defeating Go Shiozaki in 24-07. So Go finishes with 3-2 with 6 points, and Kaito wins the block at 3-1-1 for 7 points. He is the A block representative, as they say. This was really good, but like, just not up to the level of that January 4th match. I kind of figured it wouldn't be, especially with Go doing that whole arm storyline and, like, you know, definitely played into those matches you would expect. Although not quite as much as I expected to.
Yeah, I had that exact same note that I've expected the arm story to be like the focus of the match. And it's really only, you know, there's a few points where he's grabbing at the arm, but you know, towards the end of the match, he's like hitting lariats and like showing no effects. So it was a little strange.
Yeah. And there was like a weird sequence early on too, where they struggled to get on the same page for a little bit, which you wouldn't really expect for these two. Especially, like I said, their match earlier this year is my number 2 match of the year so far. So, you know, this was not close to that level, but it was still pretty awesome. You know, especially down the stretch where like Go is like doing these awesome standing lariats. Like there was one where he like killed Kaito and Kaito kicked out like 2.999, and it was a great fucking kick out, because like he didn't do like a big dramatic kick out. He just like barely rolled his shoulder off the mat.
Yeah, his arm was like 1 inch off of the mat. That was awesome.
It was awesome. I mean, we don't get enough of those kind of kick outs anymore. He still looked dead. The crowd even gasped. You know, they were like, ah, even though they're not supposed to. So I thought that was great. But yeah, Kaito finished him with a tiger suplex hold. I went 4 stars on it. I thought it was really good. Great main event, but you know, not up to the level of their, you know, match of the year level matches, you know,
yeah,
like 4 3/4-star match from January 4th. So
yeah, I also went 4 stars. I, you know, sometimes I forget how much we agree on stuff because of our feuds over the minute details of certain wrestling promotions. But I think Kaito has just turned a corner. I think at this point you just have to talk about him like he's one of the best young guys in Japan, because he's someone who frustrated.
Who the fuck is even close?
Exactly. He did frustrate me a lot early in his career, where I would like certain matches and then, you know, it seemed like he could only work one type of match for a while, where he could only get battered and then come up and for a last minute comeback. And now I think he's just a complete wrestler. You know, he definitely works over Go for big portions of this match, and it like totally works and it's totally believable, but he also like gets beat up super well too.
Yeah,
and I think he's just fully come into his own, and I think you could you know, even though you could say his like title run was like maybe too early or something, I think it told one story, and now I think he's like ready for another story with the title again, or you know, some sort of title chase, or you know, you could do all sorts of things with him now, and I think he's just totally set up for the future.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, I can't remember if I gave the speech on a free show or a Patreon show, so that would obviously greatly impact the number of people who heard it. But like, Kaito to me is like easily most improved wrestler, like as far as like as the year goes. Like, just not that I didn't like him before, I always liked him, but like you really just saw him like put it all together this year and like come together as like the complete package as an ace candidate. So you know, just he always had like you said, always had the selling, but his offense is just way better now, so you can carry that portion of a match a lot better, and like his crowd connection and his charisma have just really developed really well this year, and like he's much more of like, now it just feels like, you know, before his last title reign, it's like, well, you see the potential and you get why they're doing this, but he's not quite there yet. This year it's just like, okay, he's the guy. I mean, that's it. I mean, like, there is nothing missing in this package at this point. So, you know, definitely. I mean, he's, you know, he's had a match of the year level match for me, at least. So I don't know what you gave that. Go.
Kaito. Yeah, I went 4.5 on that. I really liked it.
Yeah. So like just a top level match of the year level match for me. And, you know, I mean, not taking away from Goshi Ozaki anyway, it's been good forever, but like, you know, that was definitely like a coming out party for Kaito, and he's had plenty of other great matches this year. So, and this was another one. But yeah, there you go. The N1 overall, I'd say this was like one of those shows that's hard to talk about as a podcaster, because it's like a very good show that you could also maybe argue under delivered a little bit. Like, I thought maybe I was expecting a little more out of, definitely out of Marufuji Nakajima, although expecting anything out of a Marufuji match at this point is a problem. But maybe like I'm a little disappointed that like one of the other undercard matches didn't quite get to like the 4-star level or whatever. A lot of them were really quick, so you know, it just didn't happen. And maybe you could say the main event was even a little, I mean, the main event was one of those weird 4-star matches that was a little disappointing. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, but the Junior Rumble that met expectations though.
There you go.
No, yeah, I think that you know, I think it did its job though, because it did make me really excited for the next show.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the post match was really cool. You know, giving Kaito this moment.
Nakajima comes out. Yeah,
making fun of Go, and then like I think you know, when you're just into all these storylines, and you know, Nakajima just like has all these interesting feuds, and Kaito has interesting places to go, and you know, everything just feels to be building to, you know, the right place at the right time. I think that, you know, this type of show that necessarily doesn't really have a lot of match of the year contenders or anything, it's a lot more forgivable because it just sets up hopefully what will be a great show.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, still one of these shows where at the end of the night I still really enjoy myself. So, you know, even if it didn't have, like you said, like match of the year level stuff. So the final standings, I already gave a lot of them throughout the show, but let's just go over them real quick. Kiyomiya wins the A block at 3-1-1, 7 points. Goshi Ozaki finishes second at 3-2. Mochizuki finishes third at 2-2-1. And then you have a three-way tie for last with Soya, Kitamiya, and Sakuraba all at 2-3. The B block, Nakajima wins it at 4-1. Sugera finishes in second at 3-1-1. Then you have Kano in third at 3-2. Marufuji in fourth at 2-2-1. Taniguchi in fifth at 2-3. And poor Inamura, 0-5 in last place. My top 10 matches of the N1, I'll just give them really quickly here. The first three, all 3 3/4, 10th place, Kaito versus Sakuraba from night 5. 9th place, Kano versus Taniguchi in the B block from night 3. I should mention, by the way, I called that doubleheader night 4 and night 5. I know some people called it night 4 afternoon, night 4 evening, whatever. It doesn't matter. Just in case anybody gets confused. 8th place, Marufuji versus Sugera, also from night 3 in the B block. Marufuji's won really good match of this tournament at like 3 3/4. Then the next 7-4, all 4-stars. 7th place, Kano versus Nakajima from night 1. 6th place, Goshi Ozaki versus Kaito from the show we just talked about. 5th place, Nakajima versus Taniguchi from night 4. And 4th place, Kaito versus Masa, Kiyomiya versus Kitamiya from night 3. And then the top 3, all 4 1/4. 3rd place, Goshi Ozaki versus Masaki Mochizuki from night 5. Second place, Goshi Ozaki versus Kazuchika Sakuraba from night eight, or sorry, the night three. Give that 4.25. And first place, Kaito versus Mochizuki from night one, which the 30-minute draw, that's still my favorite match of the tournament. But, you know, a lot of really good stuff here. All 10 of those matches, definitely worth checking out. Especially recommend the top three. I mean, Go and Mochizuki, Go and Sakuraba, those are also very awesome matches. So there you go.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything on my top list that you would have missed. So
yeah,
good stuff.
The average star ratings for the tournament, the overall winner easily was Kaito for me. Gave him an average of 3.9. Second place was Mochizuki at 3.75. Third place was Goshi Ozaki at 3.6. Well, really, Go had an awesome tournament except for one match. I really hated that Goshi Ozaki versus Masa Kitamiya match from, I think, the last single cam show. I gave it 2 stars. So, like, that dragged Go down a lot. Otherwise, he would have been, like without that, he would be right there at Kaito. So that was pretty much what happened. And then fourth place, I basically had a three-way tie top B block, all 3.5. So Kano, Nakajima, and Sugera, all 3.5. So, you know, those are my top finishers. Soya right there at 3.45. Sakuraba right there at 3.35. And then Kitamiya with like a 2.95, again, dragged down by that one match. Marufuji, no surprise, the absolute bottom here at a 2.85. Shuhei with a 3.3. And Inamura at a 3.15. I believe that's everybody. So, you know, a lot of good matches here. A lot of people in the high threes, but, you know, just a few people that I didn't really like their stuff. So, just basically Marufuji, really, is the one yeah. at the bottom. And even yeah. that, I mean, he was, like, plopped up by that 3.3 and 3/4 match with Sugera. You take that out, and he was doing really bad, so.
Yeah, I mean, one thing you can say, though, is that it's better than Champions Carnival, so. It
sure as fuck is. I mean, Jesus. Anyway, so the N1 finals is on October 11th, so next Sunday. We're talking about it right here again on the free omakase. So you get to hear that, even if you're a freeloader, as the term goes, I believe. The opener here is a 6-man tag. Hajime Ohara, Seki Yoshioka, and Yohei of Full Throttle taking on Kinya Mokata, Seiya Morihashi, and Junta Miyawaki. The match 2, Akitoshi Saito and Masao Inoue taking on Tadasuke and Neo. That should be something.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast.
I really want to see Tadasuke interact with those two guys. That should be a lot of fun. Match 3, Takashi Sugera, Kazuchika Sakuraba, Kazuyuki Fujita, and Kendo Kashin. Hell yeah. Taking on Kano, Masa Kitamiya, Manabu Soya, and Yoshiki Inamura. Sugera-gun against Kongo. That should be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah! I mean, this show just has so many weird, fun matchups.
Match 4 for the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Titles: Yoshinori Ogawa and Hayata against Harada and Kotoge. Momonosuke Shuntai trying to win back the belts he used to dominate. That should be really good. Match number 5: the GHC Junior Heavyweight Title: Kotaro Suzuki against Hawo. I really like Hawo. I think he's been really good lately, so that should be a lot of fun. And then the semi-main event: an 8-man tag. Goshi Ozaki, Shuhei Taniguchi, Mohamed Yone, and Daiki Inaba against Marufuji, Keiji Muto, Masakatsu Funaki, and Masaki Mochizuki.
How can you not love this promotion? This is the greatest promotion in the world. Like, this is just made for nerds, and that's why it's just the best.
Like, here's fucking Masakatsu Funaki here to take on. I want to see him grapple with Yone. Let's go. It should be great. And the main event, of course, the N1 Victory Finals, Kaito Kiyomiya versus Katsuhiko Nakajima. Who do you think is winning that? I think Nakajima, probably.
I do, you know, I do think that it, you know, Kaito is totally ready for another title run, but I agree that it probably makes more sense for Nakajima to win here and go on and win the title, and then you can build something down the line with them. And I personally, like, Nakajima is probably my, if I had to pick, like, my single favorite wrestler in Noah. And I would love for him to get, like, another run and be able to really, you know, have a nice run on top as, like, you know, with this heel persona.
Yeah. So there you go. This is at Osaka Eidon Arena number 1. It looks like tickets are moving okay. The first two categories, you know, of tickets say there's only a few available. The last two do say there's still much available. So who knows if they're going to sell out the half capacity Ileana won or not, but you know, I hope they do because I like Noah.
So, yeah,
you know, at least they have a stable ownership now. So you don't have to worry so much about the minutia of the, you know, what's it called, of the day to day attendance. So, but there you go. That's the N1 victory. So coming up on the Patreon tomorrow, which again, patreon.com/wrestlingomakase, if you'd like to sign up for all our coverage, is the Champion Carnival Final. So that's from Korakuen Hall. The finals, of course, is Zeus versus Kento Miyahara. The far more interesting semi-main event is Yuma Aoyagi against Koji Doi, which may actually be more exciting than the entire Champion Carnival so far.
Well, I, you know, as much as I have no love right now for the current state of All Japan, I mean, Zeus and Kento do have a 5-star match to their name in my book, so I feel like I will always watch like that matchup at least.
Yeah, it's just it feels so, I don't know if played out is the right word, but it just feels like one of the most boring finals they could have booked, but I guess we'll see. But yeah, we'll have a full review of that on the Patreon tomorrow with me and Paul, along with the tomorrow's New Japan show on a Patreon exclusive full omakase, so on Monday, so definitely check that out. Patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. Anything you want to plug before we sign off here, Skyler?
You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com with two W's, TWWITTERDOTCOM. You know, outside of that, I mean, I'm sure if you follow me, you'll just get mad at me. But yeah, there, I will probably be on Omakase again at some point. You know, John did tell me behind the scenes off mic that he was like, you gotta be on every Patreon episode now. Wants to bring me into the fold. I'm the unofficial co-host. You know, so who knows, maybe I'll be on again later. And also, you know, I always try to plug something someone else is doing. So Bad Wrestling Podcasts, always love those guys. You know, listen to them. That's probably the, you know, the second best wrestling podcast behind Wrestle Omakase.
There you go. Yeah. Of course, they've both been on the show. I think I was going to say both many times, but I think it's actually only one time for Chris, but a bunch of times for God, why am I blanking? Kevin. I'm suddenly blanking on his name. Yeah. I'm sorry, Kevin.
Well, didn't you guys just do like an Attack on Titan episode, basically?
No, we didn't do that. We should have. I don't know. We should do that on the Patreon, honestly. I should bring him on for Anime Omakase and just like discuss the Attack on Titan lore. Because we did that every single time he came on, we ended up doing like a half an hour on Attack on Titan. So we should probably just like get it out of the way.
Someone will want it. Someone out there wants that.
Have you ever watched or like read the manga or anything or no?
No, I've heard it's really dumb, which makes me want to read it. But you know, one day I will, and I'm sure I will have like freezing cold takes, and I'll freak out at the I know the basement. I guess that's a thing that I should care about. I've avoided spoilers for all these years, so when I finally do get there, we'll talk about it.
And the only thing I'll say is the way the manga has gone lately, this guy somehow finds like new and surprising ways to be fucking crazy, which is really kind of an accomplishment at this point, because I don't know how he's still doing it, honestly. But yeah, I just don't know. And the new season's supposed to start soon. It's supposed to be the final season of the TV show, and the fucking manga still has not ended. So I'm just like, I don't know how the hell they're going to squeeze all this shit. It's going to be like, I mean, really, the anime's going to be crap. I mean, it's going to be like that last season of Tokyo Ghoul RE that I gave up on halfway through, because it's like they decided, we're like, well, we only want to do one more season of like 12 episodes. So even though we have like, I don't know, like 100 chapters of the manga left, because they did the first season of Tokyo Ghoul RE like a normal paced, you know, anime with a normal amount of manga chapters, but they just decided they want to wrap it up in one more season. So like the episodes are like, you know, it's like Vince Russo booking an anime where it's like, you know, 500 things are happening every 2 minutes, and it's like, well, this is just not watchable, so I'm gonna stop watching now. I don't know.
There's definitely some like manga I read that I'm just like, I just hope this never becomes an anime, because there's only pain if that happens.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how that last season of Attack on Titan is gonna go. I guess we'll see. But you know, I think it starts soon. I don't know. I don't remember. But I think it's either winter or spring coming up. It's definitely not airing now, I don't think. But let me just look it up, because I'm curious now. Attack on Titan new season. Is it fall? What the fuck? Okay. This is great audio.
I'll fill dead space, because if you need a manga recommendation, Doro Hidoro, very good. It's about a guy with a lizard head and is really muscular women opponents, and there's demons involved and magic and sci-fi stuff. And it is, there's one season of an anime that's on Netflix that has some 3D animation stuff, but definitely highly recommend the manga. One of the best manga I've read of this century. And also the mangaka is a woman, which is also something that's not super easy to find, especially with a manga like the Mecha Hype manga. So I need
to describe this. Okay, so I found the answer. It airs December 7th, so it's winter, winter whatever. It's probably going to be a split thing with 10 and 12, so where they say everything's like the last season, but they really mean it's going to air in two seasons at this point. But what the fuck is this website where I found this? So it's like Attack on Titan Season 4 air date, and I look over at the side, and like one of the stories on the side that wants me to click on is Claudia Conway reveals her mother has COVID. I'm like, what is a website that's serving people who want to know the Attack on Titan Season 4 release date and Kellyanne Conway's COVID status? Like, where is the crossover there?
Yeah, this sounds like my Twitter timeline.
It's like, what the fuck? There you go. So if you want to learn, go to HITC.com if you want to learn all about anime release dates and the COVID positive status of various Trump officials. And it's like a picture of this teenage girl, I guess, with the video where she revealed her mom is COVID.
Yeah, the TikTok.
It was a TikTok?
That's yes.
Awesome. She took to the Chinese airwaves. The TikTok. Do you know he his TikTok ban got turned down in court, right? That's what happened.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah.
I think so.
Extremely funny saga of just something that I truly don't care about, but whatever the result is, it will be funny. Yeah. So, yeah.
TikTok. TikTok.
Yeah, that's the type of wins that our society needs nowadays.
Yeah. All right, there you go, folks. And what a better way to end than that. So,
and now we're both going to, John Tolley, we're both going to watch NXT TakeOver, which apparently is on right now.
Is it?
Velveteen Dream and Kushida might be on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Velveteen Dream. There you go. Like, when I saw this tweet from some guy who was like, I refuse to watch New Japan because of Will Ospreay. Because you're getting mad at somebody who was like, the G1's better than Raw or SmackDown. He's like, well, I'll stick with Raw or SmackDown because they don't have Will Ospreay. And it's like, okay. you do that, buddy. WWE.
Also, Velveteen Dream putting up against someone who's like 5'6" is already a little suspect. Yeah, he's shown predilection for short people in the past. So.
There you go. That's the way to end for the pedophilia.
Yeah, on a Velveteen
Anyway, folks, thank you.
Yeah, also, we also endorse the death of the Velveteen Dream. Yeah. We'll sneak this into the end here.
There you go. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I want to, again, the Patreon, patreon.com/wrestlingomakase for upcoming Champion Carnival and G1 coverage this week, Monday through Thursday. Lots of stuff coming up. You can, of course, also follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase, Wrestling Wouldn't Fit. Thank you, as always, for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.